is Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag on KUNV. I'm Sarah Felberg, editor of Las Vegas Weekly. And on tonight's show, a mental and physical test of endurance. Not for our listeners, hopefully they'll enjoy the show just fine, but I'm here with Tanner Bell, co-founder of the Ragnar Relay, a nearly 200-mile relay race that takes runners more than 24 hours. Thanks so much for being here, Tanner.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, so the Ragnar Relay Las Vegas of this year just went down last weekend, and it was my first Ragnar Relay. I ran it, and it was just a blast. It was so much fun, and I had to talk to you to hear a little bit more about how this crazy thing got started.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you had the opportunity. Hopefully it was an amazing experience.
It definitely was.
What was your team name?
We were the Tireless 12, and then we had a second team that was the Tireless 13 through 24.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, that's awesome. Very cool. So I was actually announcing at the start and finish line, one of my favorite things to do. So I get to announce all the team names and then see them come through and see the excitement at the start and the exhaustion at the finish. So
yeah, and there are some great team names this year.
Yeah, there are some great team names. There are some team names that made me blush when I said them. But yeah, overall it was awesome.
No, I have to say, it has never before occurred to me on a Friday, like, let's get 12 people together and run for 30 hours in the middle of the desert. How did you guys come up with this idea?
You know, it's a funny question. We actually modeled it after a race in Oregon called the Hood to Coast. It's a great race. It's been around since the early 80s. It's actually a great story. There were three original founders of Ragnar, and one of them was Steve Hill. The other was Dan Hill, Steve's son, and then myself. Dan and I grew up across the street from each other, so we've been childhood friends. And Steve, in the early 80s, ran the Hood to Coast, loved the format, loved the idea, became enamored with it, always wanted to do one where we were from in Salt Lake City. And Dan and I heard about him talking about it for years and years, and finally, you know, in college, Dan and I were sort of sitting around staring down the barrels of real jobs. You know, I had accepted a job with an accounting firm, and he was working for a spa company, Bullfrog Spas, and, you know, good honorable professions. But we thought, you know, why don't we try out this race? It would be a really fun thing to do. And we didn't know where it would take us. We didn't know if it was going to be a full-time gig or a part-time gig. So we started it in 2004 with about 242 runners. So that was the very first year and the first Ragnar Relay. And it's just been an immense, you know, an amazing success. We've seen it expand across the country to today we have 15 relay races and about 60,000 participants nationwide.
Wow. And have you always been a runner?
You know, ironically, Dan was a runner, Steve was a runner, and I've always been active and active and fit, but I wasn't necessarily a runner like you consider runners today. You know, Dan and I played a lot of volleyball, we were skiers. Dan was on the cross country team, but I really wasn't a runner. I loved the party side of it, you know. I love the idea of, like, you know, testing yourself, but also being able to, like, running is such a solitary sport, right? In a way, it can be a selfish sport. I don't know if that's bad necessarily, but, you know, marathoning is very, it's about you, and it's about your PR, and it's about when you finish and how you start and what you do in between. And, you know, Ragnar takes it to a different level. It takes it to sort of, it's the only running event that brings a team aspect into running, and so it's very unique. Instead of worrying about what you're doing, you're worrying about your team, and, you know, you're running because you don't want to let your team down, and you're worried about, you know, the person that, you know, the person that's run two legs and is really struggling, and how are you going to cheer them on, and how are you going to get them water, and what's the strategy to keep their spirits up? I mean, it's so much more about the team than it is about the individual. At least that's what it was for me initially. Like, I love the concept and I love the idea, but it wasn't necessarily the running that got me involved initially.
Sure.
Certainly now I'm a runner and I'm a total convert to the sport. I just love it. But that wasn't what, you know, drew me to it initially.
Yeah, I had a similar experience this weekend where I've done a half marathon and it was a very individual thing. And going into this, I was kind of looking at the schedule, and the format for listeners who haven't heard of Ragnar is 12 person teams, and each person runs three legs. So you go through the whole lineup three times over the course of a day or so, however long it takes you to finish. And I kind of imagined, looking at the course maps and not really knowing what to expect, that we would have all this downtime, that there would be all this time to sit in the van. I brought magazines. We had a TV in the van. I brought movies. I thought we were going to be watching the whole Planet Earth series on DVD. And little did I know that you spend so little time sitting around waiting. You're constantly jumping in and out of this van, stopping to scream out the windows and cheer people on and honk the horn and really leapfrogging and playing catch up with your runners the whole time.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. I mean, it's so true. And it's funny because that runner mentality, you're like, you know, you sort of have to switch your runner mentality, because your runner mentality is, geez, I run three legs and I'm going to have, you know, 4 to 8 hours of off time. So, yeah, I'm going to watch the Planet Earth series. But you realize, like, very quickly that it's not about you and your time. It's about making sure your teammates are doing good, making sure you're prepped and ready to go. And you know, and figuring out how to have fun in between. I mean, we really believe, you know, that for us, we don't put on running events. We put on, you know, these social experiences. We sort of take it to a different level. So
sure. And one of the things, kind of going off of that I thought was funny, during our race, a couple of times we'd have runners who were, you know, feeling really tired, they were hurting somewhere or just exhausted. They kind of say, oh, I don't know, guys, I'm exhausted, I might have to walk a little bit, I'm sorry. And we all kind of go, oh, don't worry, it's not a race. And then we'd stop and go, wait, it is a race, actually. We are racing, technically speaking. And at work today, everyone's been asking me, oh, how did the team do? How'd you guys place? I have no idea how we did. I don't have a clue.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. 90, you know, well, I don't know if it's 90, but, you know, 70, 80% of teams are really out there to have fun and really to run for your team, you know. And so certainly there's a very competitive element, but the competition is so different. It's not necessarily about competition with other teams. I mean, for a lot of people it is, and so we never want to lose that competitive edge of those teams that really want to place and do well. But for a lot of them, you know, I mean, for a lot of people, I mean, we're not sort of your standard running event. You know, you look at the people that are out there, and there's a lot of first-time sort of novice runners that Ragnar is really the only way that they've been able to get into running, because it really isn't that solitary sport. They need somebody that's depending on them. You know, they need somebody to train that they know, okay, if I don't train, I'm going to let these people down, and I'm training, and then you're training as a group, you know, you're training on the weekends or weekdays or whatever it may be. So, yeah, it's really unique that way, but that's what I found.
And you mentioned at the beginning, you know, some of the team names that you've read out loud, and I saw on the course this weekend a lot of interesting team costumes and the vans. Can you talk a little bit about how the team spirit kind of comes through besides just cheering on the runners?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's one of the best explanations I've heard is that it's a slumber party for adults. I've also heard that it's, you know, Beta Breakers meets, you know, an adventure race, the Eco Primal Quest or something like that. It's sort of a very doable, very doable overnight party, I guess, in a way, or adventure is better described. So there's, you know, every team, I mean, we talked about the competitive element, and, you know, sometimes people are more competitive for, you know, the pimped out van award for the best decorated van, or for the overall favorite team, or the best team name, or the best team costume. And so, you know, these teams, you see these teams with these elaborate decorations and these elaborate costumes. I mean, I don't know what you saw out there. I saw, you know, like I told you, there were a couple of team names that made me blush, but really some, you know, really creative and unique team names. And, you know, I saw everything from kilts to cowboys to ninjas to, you know, one of my favorite teams is the Never Nudes. I don't know if you happen to run into those guys. They put together a fantastic YouTube video from last year. And this year they were all dressed up in blue because, you know, one of the Arrested Development guys wants to be in the Blue Man group. I mean, it's just like, it takes on a life of its own. You know, it's, It's interesting. You know, we put on the event, but Ragnar is really about the people that are out there and what they make of it. And you just see some amazing team names. I mean, did you? I'm sure you had the same experience. Saw some amazing team costumes out there.
We definitely did. One of my favorites was Hammer Time, and they were wearing like MC Hammer gold pants, and they had made these giant hammer props, and they would dance for us every time we drove by. We'd scream at them, and they would put on a little show, and definitely lifted some spirits when we were getting tired.
Yeah, one of my favorites is the, wasn't in Vegas, but there's the Backcountry.com team. They're based out of Park City. And they run they have three or four teams that run our Utah race every year. But their motto is, we use the gear we sell. And so when they came to run our Wasatch Back in Utah, the Ragnar Relay Wasatch Back, they each ran with a piece of gear. And so one guy was running harnessed, and he had a kayak harness behind him.
Oh my
and
goodness.
One guy, actually, I think it was the CEO of Backcountry.com, was he was cross-country skiing on asphalt. That was like what he did for his leg. It was unbelievable. The guys were just nuts. It was really funny.
I can't even imagine doing that. I thought it was hard enough in my running shoes.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
So how many times have you run the Ragnar Relay at this point?
You know, it's amazing. I had not. It was. It was really just sort of me and Dan for the first couple of years, and so we never had time to be able to run any of our own events. So it was only about 4 years ago that I finally had the opportunity. I don't know how many since then. I've really gone on a streak, so I don't know how many I've run. But I'm running Tennessee this weekend, so eight or nine, probably.
Wow. So give us some strategy tips. As an experienced Ragnar relayer, what are some of the things that you do strategy-wise to kind of keep your sanity and to keep awake and enthusiastic the whole time? For our team, it took us about 30 hours, so it was a lot of time out there.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see. My feedback is, unless you're sort of know the team that you're on and understand like your teammates and try to set a standard. And so if you're a real serious team, you know, let everybody know that we're going for first place or we're, you know, whatever. But if you're not, let everybody know that, hey, this is just be out there to have fun. You know, we're not, you know, we want you to train, we want you to work hard, and we want everybody to do their best. But, you know, we're out there to just have a great time. I would say that's sort of my advice. I think don't take yourselves any more seriously than you want to or need to.
Sure.
So, but I think also, you know, it's important to train. I mean, we have training. It's doable because you're doing it with a team, but at the end of the day, it's still, you know, between 12 and 18 miles, 12 and 20 miles. And so it is an event that is challenging, presents a challenge for any individual, any skill level. So I would say, you know, make sure to do your training. Don't fake it to make it. You'll be a lot happier the day after the race. And you know, make sure you're prepared, food and water and all that good stuff.
And two of the runners in my van, three of them actually had done it before, and both two of them said that this time the legs that they had and the heat and just different factors made this the hardest Ragnar that they had done so far. Do you have in your head the memory of like a hardest Ragnar that you've done?
Yeah, actually, that was going to be the other point I was going to make is, you know, Ragnar, the other thing is don't get too hung up on whatever your plan is, because something will go wrong. That's just sort of part of the magic of Ragnar. Like, you will forget I'll give you two of my examples. So I was, I did Florida Keys with a team last year, and we had made it all the way to Lake 32, and then I had to get home early for some family stuff. And so I left the team, ran my last leg, but it was really important to me that I finished with the team. And right when I was about to do my last leg, or right after I finished my last leg, I realized that my bag had got left four exchanges back. Actually, I didn't know where it was left, but I had a flight to catch in like 2 hours, and
I had to go.
And it's just like, you know, it's like at the time, it's like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. I'm going to miss my flight. I don't know. But then, you know, you're flying home and you realize, you know, I jumped on the plane. I made the plane. There's this whole story about how I was supposed to catch a flight in Key West, but they canceled my flight. So I drove all the way up to Miami and got a speeding ticket. And, you know, and then I got on, and I'm, you know, and the whole time I think it is terrible. And then I got on the plane and I'm flying home and I'm like, that was the best worst weekend I ever had in my life. You know, it's like, it's just the magic. Nothing, but something will always go wrong, and that's what adds to the magic of it, I think. So don't stress out about it all going right, because that's the fun of it. The other one that was my hardest one I remember running in New York on a dirt road, and it was my last leg, and I was having IT band issues. I think the second hardest set of legs, and this dirt road, I just basically told myself, my IT band was killing me, I just said, I don't care how slow you run, as long as you run, just don't walk. And it was sort of comical because there was a guy with me who would run and then walk and run and then walk, and then I was just running really slow, and so I would catch up to him, and right about the time I would catch up to him, he'd start running again. And it just made me so mad the whole time. But that was my most painful and brutal experience. But I also remember at the end, the volunteers had warm muffins for me, and that was pretty awesome.
Oh, that is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw a lot of runners who were kind of running and walking, and we also saw runners, we saw some ultra runners who we kept calling them real runners. You know, we'd get passed by people, but we say, oh, well, we got passed, but they were real runners. Do you find that kind of happens a lot, a sort of mix of the amateur recreational runners with the more serious people and everyone kind of, you know, sizing each other up?
Yeah. Well, there's sort of two interesting mixes there. One is, within a team, you can have really serious hardcore runners, and then you can have the novices, and you can have them on the same team. And what's amazing about Ragnar is, you know, the hardcore runner can push themselves to their limit, and the novice can also push themselves to their limit, and they can both have a very challenging experience, but be on the same team and not let each other down. Like, each person knows that they push each other the hardest, and so that is a dynamic that is so hard to find in any sport, really. But then you also have the dynamic of that, you know, 20% of like the real competitive teams, you know. The ultra teams that run, I don't know if the audience knows, so the ultra teams, instead of doing a team of six, they do a team of 12, or I'm sorry, instead of doing a team of 12, they do a team of six. What that means is that they double up on their miles. So instead of doing the normal, you know, 80%, 90% of the teams do 12 to 20 miles, so that means the ultra teams are doing 24 to 40 miles. And so there's this really unique dynamic. You know, the faster teams in Ragnar, they actually start later in the day. And oftentimes, if they're really fast, they'll actually pass everybody throughout the race, and they'll finish first. And, you know, you always hear the people saying, yeah, that jerk ran by me at 3 in the morning and said, hey, way to go, keep it up. And I was like, you jerk, don't talk. You know? Like, you don't really count them because they're the real runners. But, you know, you do, you just don't want to.
Exactly.
It's pretty fascinating. So.
And what about, I mean, what's the future for Ragnar? You guys have expanded enormously. You're in a ton of cities right now. So many runners. There were, I think, 480 teams in Vegas this past weekend.
Yep.
Where do you guys see it going?
You know, I think for us, it's all about putting on an amazing race. And so, you know, the magic is really three things. We have to have a beautiful course. We have to have a really committed running community, and then we have to have, you know, a population of fit and active people. So there's certainly more to come from Ragnar, but for us, it's about making sure that we're putting on great races everywhere and doing it in places that we're really, really passionate about. You know, I grew up, we have ties in each of the places where we do races generally. If it's not me, if it's not, you know, Dan, it's somebody else in the company who, you know, says, hey, this is a beautiful place, or this has a great running community. You know, I grew up in Vegas. We've been looking to do a race in Vegas since 2006, and we really had some challenges to find a really safe and engaging course, and it took us a few more years to really find it. But, you know, so that's for us. I mean, we want to put on a great race and do it in a place that we're passionate about. So So there's certainly more. We just recently announced Colorado. So Ragnar Relay Colorado, and then we also have a new Ragnar Relay Cape Cod in Boston. So those are brand new, and certainly can't let the cat out of the bag on any more, but there's more to come from us. And if anybody out there has a great place where we can get passionate about doing the race, then we'll take a serious look at coming out there.
Sounds great. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today, and good luck next weekend in Tennessee.
Hey, thank you. If you want to join, let me know. We'll get you on a team.
I think I'm going to be recovering still, but maybe next year.
All right. Take care. Thanks for having me.
You can read my Ragnar Relay Diary in this week's issue of Las Vegas Weekly. We're back with Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag on KUNV. I'm Sarah Feldberg, editor of Las Vegas Weekly, and there is a new lady everyone is talking about, but you won't see her picture on the cover of any magazines. Her name is Siri, and she's the new iPhone application on the 4GS, a voice-activated assistant that can answer a lot of questions. Associate editor Ken Miller is in the studio with me today to talk a little bit more about Siri and his experiences playing around with the phone. How you doing, Ken?
I'm doing great. I'm excited because I don't think we get the chance to really talk about new technology on this program. And we all are kind of tech geeks at Las Vegas Weekly. So it's kind of fun to delve into this. This one seems to be unique in that everybody is crazy about this thing. Everybody wants to use it.
Totally.
I mean, the iPhone sales are skyrocketing. I think this is a big reason for it. You've seen the commercials.
So let's talk quickly. You know, there have been a lot of other kind of voice-activated phone features. I think my current iPhone, which is not the 4GS, has a voice-activated dialing that sometimes I hit by mistake and I don't really want to use. How is Siri different from maybe what people are used to in terms of voice-activated phone features?
Well, I don't actually have an iPhone 4S myself. I wish I did. But the way I understand it, it's basically, as you said, it's a personal assistant. You can send messages, you can set reminders, you can place phone calls, you can ask it to play music. It really is quite remarkable in how diverse it is. But what it's really become known for is answering questions, because people get this thing and the first thing they want to do is ask questions. It just seems to be, you know, second nature for people. And I actually have to say, that curiosity has been justified. This thing's pretty amazing. We put out a survey on Facebook asking our readers to post some of the questions that they've asked it. And we asked, be honest. We want you to be candid here.
Now, one of the things, I mean, in the commercial, before we get into what our readers have asked, there's a commercial for it right now that is pretty ingenious, where it shows kind of all the different things that Siri can do.
Exactly.
And one of my favorites, you know, they say, where is the nearest dry cleaner, or where is the nearest this? But one of them,
I'm locked out of my house.
That was my favorite. You know, kind of that moment when you're alone and you feel so lost and you go, oh my God, I'm locked out of my house. What am I going to do? And here's this woman with her phone, and she just tells the phone that she's locked out. And Siri pops up and says, I found 3 locksmiths nearby or relatively close. And she kind of talks almost in a vernacular. It's not that computerized phone speak that I think of when I think of a robot answering questions.
And I think that's really what it was meant for. I think that was the key, the goal when they made this thing, was to make it so that people could, anybody without even knowing how to work a phone, could use this and get help with whatever they needed. And hopefully that's, you know, mostly what it'll be used for. But it's, like I said, it seems like people also see this as like a fun little toy that they can use to just mess around with when they're bored.
Sure.
And some of these Facebook responses just killed me. One reader volunteered this for her husband. I guess he didn't want to post this himself, but he told Siri that he was horny.
Oh, dear.
To which Siri then told him where the closest 10 escort services were.
Wow. So Siri is also an R-rated app. I didn't realize.
This is maybe my favorite response. This gentleman actually had a conversation with Siri. I'll do both parts. The user, I love you. Siri, I am only here to serve you. User, I love you, Siri. Siri, you can't. User says, why? And Siri says, I don't know. Maybe the Genius Bar folks can answer that.
Oh, that is wonderful.
He said he laughed for minutes afterwards.
So Siri has a sense of humor.
Absolutely. We found that out firsthand ourselves. After reading this Facebook poll, we got so curious that we hunted down a gentleman in the office who has one and asked if we could borrow it and mess around with it. And he was generous enough to do that. So I want to give a shout out to Paul Huntsbury at GMG for lending us his iPhone. And it was interesting that as soon as I started to use it, I went into the break room of our building. And as soon as I started to use it, a bunch of people started to gather around us.
Sure.
Because this gathers attention. You know, people know what it is. People know what Siri is. Not everyone has it, but they know what it is. So we had, you know, people shouting out suggestions for us, and it was just a lot of fun. I don't want to give too much away because this is going to be in Las Vegas Weekly, and I want our readers to be surprised. But there was one question in particular. We made our questions kind of pop culture because we wanted to see if she was, you know, updated on movies. So we asked her, you know, do you know HAL, which is of course the computer from 2001, which to me might almost be the model for Siri because it's very kind of similar to what Siri is in that it handles things for the crew. It's a personal assistant. So we had to ask, do you know HAL? Now, people who have seen the movie would get this answer right away, but I'll explain it. Her response was, I'm sorry, I'm afraid I can't answer that. And, you know, all of us just amazed. We just like open-mouthed amazement. In the movie, you know, Dave, the astronaut, says, open the pod bay doors. And HAL says, I'm sorry, I'm afraid I can't do that. So she got it right away. I mean, it was like she knew the reference and she responded in a very humorous way. It just, it's an amazing piece of technology.
It really is.
And it's almost a little scary, actually.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking, too, hearing all of this stuff. And obviously, I don't have the phone yet, but a lot of it keeps reminding me a little bit of iRobot-like scenarios and the kind of, you know, robots getting too smart or
Skynet
computers.
Skynet was what I thought.
Exactly, yeah. Computers kind of taking over the world. I mean, Siri lives in our iPhones, but, you know, I guess I can see the possibility of her, you know, getting a glitch, or what if Siri gets hacked and suddenly all of our contacts and all of our appointments and all of our, you know, reminders to pick up the dry cleaning and the kids at soccer practice go out the window.
Well, as you said, she has a little personality in her voice, but at the same time, it is that HAL cold kind of tone that makes you think, you know, technology gone wrong. I mean, this is like, you know,
exactly.
We've seen this in all the movies. Hopefully, you know, Siri is hack-proof. I guess we'll find out.
I guess we will find out.
It doesn't stop me from wanting an iPhone 4, that's for sure.
Do you think you're going to get one?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this seems like, you know, tailor-made for me because I'm always getting into sticky situations. I mean, I'm kind of clumsy and, you know, accident-prone.
You need Siri.
I need Siri in my life. Another really funny, I have to go through some of these because these are really funny. Another friend of mine, this wasn't on Facebook, but a friend of mine who works with my wife at UPS, he's just been, you know, asking his nonstop, and his favorite so far was he asked Siri, where do I bury a body? You know, like.
And did Siri have an answer to that?
Siri immediately responded with a list of local cemeteries.
Oh, all right. A very proper and appropriate response for burying a body. She didn't give you GPS coordinates to a deserted point of desert or anything.
I want to get one of these just so I can be one of those people that's just messing around with it and finding out, you know, what I can ask and what it can answer. So.
Definitely. Well, readers can see more of the questions that we asked Siri in this week's issue of Las Vegas Weekly. Personally, I'm a little concerned for all the personal assistants out there. What if their jobs are gone? Siri could be stealing jobs from people. We'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, we have some pretty good personal assistants at GMG, and I don't want to see them go. So
Maybe
I'll hold off on getting an iPhone 4 for a while.
Well, you can read more from Ken in this week's issue of Las Vegas Weekly. This is Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag on KUNV. Thanks so much to our producer, Steven Zeller, and all of our guests.